a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. And looking forward to chatting with a friend, Toby Leary, from Cape Gunworks up in Massachusetts. Lots to talk about with Toby. He's had some great content on social media. But I also want to talk about the latest with Chapter 135 as well. I wrote a piece recently about one of the changes to the gun licensing laws in Massachusetts. And it is, as far as I can tell, another attempt to make it much more difficult to exercise your right to keep and bear arms. Massachusetts kind of specializes in those types of laws, but thanks to the Civil Rights Coalition, the work that Toby Leary, Massachusetts gun owners are doing, there is a chance to undo some of the worst of the worst laws at the ballot box this November. Anyway, great conversation with Toby ahead. Take a look and a listen. Toby, thanks so much for coming on the program. It's good to see you again.
Always a pleasure, Cam. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. It's been a busy time for you guys at Cape Gunworks and the Civil Rights Coalition. And by the way, if folks want to follow you on social media, I love your X account. You're posting some great stuff there. How do they do so? What's your handle on X?
Well, we actually have three, but it's actually four if you count the Civil Rights Coalition. It's Cape Gunworks is our main account. And I have a rapid fire radio one for my podcast. And then the Civil Rights Coalition, or I think you can find it by putting in Fight Back MA is our main Twitter account.
Okay.
For the Civil Rights Coalition. So, yeah, thanks.
Excellent. And you guys should be following. What's that?
And then, of course, Toby Leary, too, if you really want to get a whole different side of me.
So I got to ask, because one of the videos I saw last couple of days, you guys had your big anniversary celebration at Cape Gunworks. We talked about that last time you were on the show. How did things go, Toby?
We had a great time. It was excellent. We had tons of people come. We had food. We had refreshments. We set up the classroom as kind of a yard sale, like a tent sale type of thing, where some stuff that's been long in the tooth, we deeply discounted it and let people come haggle with us. And we had some ammo that wasn't quite worthy for the shelf, so we just put a discounted price on that, and that went almost instantly. So there was a lot of happy customers. And in spite of it all, you know, we feed people. We have giveaways. We did some great giveaways for product and a gun and everything else. And then one jack wagon decided it was a good time to rip us off. And so we caught him stealing. And yeah, but it was, other than that, it was a great day, you know, kind of like, other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how did you like the play? You know?
Well, I'm glad they didn't let the one jack wagon spoil the day. And right. I'm guessing that he's now going to be dealt with appropriately in the eyes of the law. Let's hope.
Oh, yeah. We got him dead to rights. The police know who he is. Things are on the right track, and he's going to regret his life choices. And he's already going to be internet famous. So, you know, actually, I should say he already was internet famous, because when somebody saw our video, they reached out and said, here's his name. And so we looked him up in our system. He had purchased from us before. So, and then we went back to the cameras on that day, and guess what? This wasn't his first rodeo. So yeah, he's going to be really regretting life choices.
Yeah.
And the kicker of it all, Cam, is both times he's come in have been during events when there's a lot of chaos. So, you know, number one. Number two, he's worn outfits that say, look at me. The first time he came in, he wore his motorcycle helmet and his sunglasses the whole time he was in the shop. It was hysterical. And so we see his behavior is weird. We didn't quite pick up on the fact that he ganked something off from us that day, but we got the receipts now. And then the second time, he's got this like skin tight yellow shirt, banana yellow shirt, skin tight jeans, hat on, cowboy boots, and he's open carrying cross draw. Like nothing says, look at me and ask questions more than open carry and cross draw in a gun shop, right?
Right.
And if you like to open carry, cross draw, I got nothing against it. Like, it's your Second Amendment rights. Go for it. But it's just like, whoa, what do we got going on here, partner? And so, and so naturally we're watching him, and sure enough, he couldn't help himself. But, and there's a video on our YouTube, on our Freudian slip, the YouTube channel's been gone for almost a year now, but on X and on Instagram. So it's pretty funny stuff if you watch it.
Yeah, well, I don't want to give people tips on how to steal from gun shops, but yeah, I would say not drawing attention to yourself. That's kind of a basic thing, right? I think we're cluing anybody in here, but well, thank goodness for dumb criminals, Toby, because it makes it so much easier. So, and the other video I wanted to ask you about, and I think this is a great program. So, since we last spoke, the Supreme Court has agreed to take up a gun ban case. They're going to be hearing actually two of them, right? The challenge to Cook County, Illinois' gun ban, and the state of Connecticut's gun ban on the so-called assault weapons. Massachusetts, as you well know, has one of the broadest bans in the nation. And I got to ask me, what was your reaction when you heard that the Supreme Court was finally going to address whether or not states can ban commonly owned firearms like AR-15s?
I was so excited. It was like a weight off my shoulders, because I've been a licensed gun owner since I was 18 in the state of Massachusetts. And when I was 19 is when the 94 assault weapon ban happened. So I have literally been living under the 94 assault weapon ban, or an assault weapon ban to some extent. I use that term like the made up propaganda term that it is. I'm not trying to give it any credibility, but that's what I'm stuck with in the state of Massachusetts. And so I've been living with that since 94 in some form or another. And it got progressively worse in 98 when they made it permanent. It got worse in 2016 when Maura Healey came out with her edict and she proclaimed, thus saith Maura Healey, and acted as all three branches of government by interpreting our existing assault weapon ban and creating new enforcement for that and also redefining it. So she literally did act as all three branches of government, and the rest of the legislature and the judiciary all applauded and stood in the police behind her, all saying, oh, this is going to make us safer. It's like, how is anyone okay with this? Like, I'm screaming from the rooftops. This is nuts. But then we also had, Chapter 135 of this Acts of 2024, which took it even further. It took regular, non-AR-15, just semi-automatic rifles, and redefined what an assault weapon is. A barrel shroud, which is, been on firearms since the 1500s, to keep your hand from being burned by the barrel, give you something to hold on to. That's all of a sudden an evil feature in the eyes of the Massachusetts legislature. And, things like pistol grips and things like adjustable stocks were already banned, but now they took it to a new level. All this stuff. So I was greatly relieved. And I'm like, man, this is, I think the Supreme Court has tipped their hand how they're going to rule. I feel like we're not popping the corks on the champagne yet, but they, I think relief is coming to the 8 or 10 states and the over 100 million people in America that are affected by these types of bans and have to live as a second class citizen based on what their legislatures have told them. So I think it was a great day for us here at Cape Gun Works. We're really excited about it. And I felt like long overdue. I mean, living with it for almost 30 years, right?
Yeah,
it's crazy. So anyway, that's all good. Actually, it's 32 years if you do the math, right?
Right.
So yeah, it's long overdue.
So tell me about this video that you've made, because you're talking about liberating rifles in Massachusetts, right, as a result of this decision. And you were shooting a gun that, granted, I mean, it's got a fixed magazine, but it has some of these features. I mean, so what is the law in Massachusetts? What can you buy, Toby, if you've got a fixed magazine? Can you buy a gun with some of these features that turn it into an assault weapon if you've got a detachable magazine?
Yeah, so, you know, the beauty of every magazine and arms ban that gets passed is good people figure out how to, you know, get around them, right? You saw it with the weird stocks out of New York. You see it with the fin grip pistols and rifles and stuff like that. But Massachusetts is no different. We're not going to be told no. We're going to figure it out. We're going to, you know, maybe work within it for a little while, only to ultimately have the Supreme Court reverse it. And when they do, we are going to have the biggest liberation since D-Day, when you know, the good people of Massachusetts, New York, New Jersey, Hawaii, California, Maryland, Connecticut will all be able to own guns that the rest of the country can own. And so we have decided that any firearm purchased from us that has these features, right, that we have put on them so that we can sell them. There's a couple of different ways we've done that. Number one is what you've seen in the past with the fin gripped and the pin and welded muzzle and the pin stock and the, you know, make sure it's not adjustable and no vertical foregrip, et cetera. So you're only allowed two features or else it becomes assault weapons in this state. And so, but there's one whole other category, and that's fixed mag. If it's a fixed mag rifle, it can't be banned, or it can't be, you know, it's not considered an assault weapon. It can be a fixed mag if it had over 10 rounds. Now it would be a large capacity rifle. So those are forbidden under the current law. But we have found that people still want these rifles, and we still want to sell these rifles because it was a massive part of our business. And they are commonly owned for lawful purposes in every other state that allows them. And so what we do is we, as a licensed manufacturer, we take rifles and we modify them for sale in Massachusetts. So either by putting a fixed magazine in it or all the other features I've already said, like the fin grip and pin the stock. But when it has a fixed mag, it you don't have to worry about the adjustable stock or the folding stock or the threaded muzzle or the muzzle brake or the, you know, the barrel shroud, any of that, because at under the definition with a fixed mag, it can't be considered an assault style weapon. So so we're giving people the opportunity to buy these guns now, not have to wait till the Supreme Court rules, and there's no like tax on them, if you will. Like a pre-ban rifle, typically you spend a lot more than you would in a free state for the same gun. In Massachusetts, we're like, well, the gun is the gun. All we got to do is add the magazine. So it adds about $100 to the cost of it from any other state. And now you can get Daniel Defense or Sons of Liberty or you know, one of the Barrett Rec 7s or the Wilson Combat. We got a few of these in stock, SIG MCX and M400s. We don't really care what it is now. We'll order anything for you. And we put the fixed mag in, and we're giving you a coupon that once the Supreme Court rules, if it goes our way, which I'm sure it will, we will liberate your gun at no additional charge. We'll take the fixed mag out and return it to its original state as the founders and the manufacturers intended. So that's my story.
I love it. I love it. And I expect you guys are going to be very busy about this time next year because, you know, I think we'll get oral arguments probably late 2025, maybe early 2026. And then, you know, it'll probably be June, late June, maybe even early July before we get the decision. But I'm with you. I think that the Supreme Court, you know, tip their hand maybe is a good way of putting it, right? I mean, if you go back and you look at what they've said, going back to Heller, you know, arms that are in common use for lawful purposes can't be banned. That's what they've said. And it doesn't matter if we're talking about guns that criminals like to use, right? I mean, handguns are the weapons of choice for criminals as well as law-abiding citizens. The Supreme Court said, just because a criminal wants to use it doesn't mean you can ban it. So this whole argument that, well, you know, this is the weapon of choice for mass shooters, A, is false. But B, just because some people misuse these firearms and do terrible things with them, the vast majority of owners don't. Right. These guns are primarily used. 99.9% of them are used for lawful activities.
So I did a video on that exact subject a couple months ago, Cam, and found that More people die a year in golf cart accidents than by the hand of the bloody AR-15. And that's something people don't want to realize. It's actually one of the safest rifles in America when you think about how many people own it. It's, you know, I think 40-odd million is the number that we're going with. I think it's more, but it's, and then when you extrapolate out to, you know, FN SCARs and all the other modern sporting rifles, I think, you know, this whole category of rifle, the amount of people who die is so infinitesimal that the government just categorizes it as rifles of any kind.
Yeah.
It's not a special category for the AR-15 or the AK-47. It's just, it's a made up propaganda term to scare people.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and listen, by the way, we're not minimizing those deaths, but it's not the AR-15 any more than it's the Glock or the, you know, the Smith & Wesson. It's the person pulling the trigger. That's the person responsible for taking those lives. That's the person, that's the individual that's causing that violence. And the Supreme Court has said with handguns, you don't blame the inanimate object. You can't ban the inanimate object. It's because a criminal might want to misuse it. And I think the same thing applies for modern sporting rifles. I think we're going to see that from the Supreme Court. And you know, listen, I mean, the gun control lobby is not going to give up. We can talk maybe later on about what they're likely to do in response. But I think the outright bans, as you say, they're going away. And I look forward. I mean, I live in Virginia where they just put a ban in place. Thankfully, it's been put on hold by the courts. And it looks like the Virginia State Supreme Court is going to let that injunction stand. Fingers crossed and knock on wood. So, you know, I have not really had to deal with this except for the federal ban from 94 to 2004. But man, I got to tell you, I am so looking forward to that day when you guys in Massachusetts and the folks in New York and Connecticut and California don't have to put up with this nonsense any longer. It is going to be a great day. And, you know, the folks in Massachusetts, they've got an opportunity even before next year to get rid of a lot of the nonsense gun laws in Massachusetts. We've got the banner behind you, the Civil Rights Coalition. We're getting closer towards November. I know that it's the summer and it's slow and people aren't thinking much about politics, but what is the Civil Rights Coalition doing here? You know, as we get closer to Election Day and this referendum that'll be on the ballot where Massachusetts voters will have the chance to repeal Chapter 135.
Yeah, right now we're building a war chest so we can fight this when people start paying attention to politics. Right now in summer, you know, like Massachusetts especially, people are out on the boat, they're at the beach, they're grilling on the patios, their political events and, you know, stuff like that are very low attendance. And so it's not time to start, you know, earning our resources. We are going to keep our powder dry until it makes sense to start spending, and we're going to let people know that their rights are on the ballot. I think we're in very, very good shape. We have a massive fundraiser coming up in September. We'll talk more about that in the future, where a lot of great companies have donated firearms to be auctioned off. Smith & Wesson just gave us one of their matched sets of the 1854 rifle with that beautiful burlwood walnut and the 44 Magnum in that cased set. So that's one of them. You know, we've got some excellent donations from all kinds of manufacturers, distributors, and some FFLs around the area. So this is going to be fun. We're going to have a lot of fun with this. We're going to auction off some great guns for a great cause. And so we're fundraising and we're spreading the word. We're building the, shoring up the base. Amazingly, there's still gun owners that have no idea that they are probably a felon in waiting because they had no idea the law has changed, believe it or not. And, you know, it's just because the typical gun owner is, you know, one of those people that just want to be left alone and just, you know, go about their business and raise their families and work their job. They're not really finger on the pulse of politics unless you're an advocate or a real outspoken person for the cause. Mm-hmm. So once they are told, I had a gentleman and his son come in and say, I want to buy my wife a semi-automatic shotgun for home defense. She only has an FID card. And I said, Jack, I hate to tell you this, but she can no longer own the semi-automatic shotgun with an FID card. He goes, what are you talking about? She's got a ton of them for hunting. And I said, I know, but welcome to the laws that passed in 2024. He had no idea. And there's good people. We've dumped it, felons in waiting, because they don't even know they're on the wrong side of the law, even though they've done everything to try to comply. It's crazy.
It is crazy. So, and I mean, I got to tell you, I don't know how you keep up with it, because there are so many provisions of Chapter 135. There's stuff that I'm learning all the time, and there's stuff that is still being rolled out, right? I mean, I noticed that the Gun Owners Action League, I wrote about this a few days ago, they got to look at the proposed live fire training, quote unquote, portion of your license to carry. And it's not really training as much as it is a marksmanship test. I mean, you've got to, I think it's, you got to go 5 for 5, and I believe it's 3 yards, 7 yards, and 10 yards, in order to get your license to carry. And these are, you know, the people who are taking these classes, in many cases, maybe in the vast majority of cases, will have never held a handgun before, right? I mean, they're going into this blind, and yet the EOPS, the Office of Public Safety, wants to put in place this standard that basically says if you're not a marksman, you don't get a license to carry. And it's not just a license to carry, right? As you say, this is a license to possess in your home now.
Right. Even purchase. You can't purchase anything. Can't even buy a box of ammo. Can't buy a magazine. Can't buy.
We're losing your audio again.
Can't buy powder, brass, or bullets for reloading. None of it. You
know? That is so nuts. And again, this is what we're talking about with Chapter 135. This is what is going to be on the ballot, thanks to Massachusetts gun owners, thanks to the Civil Rights Coalition. This November, people are going to have a chance to repeal this nonsense. And we're going to be talking a lot more about it. I definitely want to hear more about this fundraiser coming up in September. But Toby, again, I want folks to follow you on social media. You're posting some great stuff. I want thieves to stay away from Cape Gunworks now that they know that they're going to be on a candid camera. I want folks to buy rifles that can be liberated a year from now. And I want you to come back on the program here in the next couple of days so we can keep going with the conversation. Will you do that?
Let's do it. Be happy to anytime.
All right. Toby Leary from Cape Gunworks and the Civil Rights Coalition. Thanks again for being with us here on Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My thanks once again to Toby for joining us on the program, and looking forward to continuing the conversation here in the near future. Now, before we get to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report, let's talk about this for a second. From city streets to mountain trails, your gear should go wherever life takes you. And that's why at Modern Rugged Leather, every bag is handcrafted from premium, responsibly sourced leather. It's designed to look sharp, last long, and tell a story all its own. Every stitch, every buckle, every strap reflecting timeless craftsmanship, and it's backed by a lifetime warranty. Because quality shouldn't quit when the adventure begins. So whether it's the boardroom or the back roads, Modern Rugged Leather helps you carry confidence every step of the way. Modern Rugged Leather, modern style, timeless durability, and it's backed for life. Life takes you places. Make sure your gear keeps up. When you go to modernrugged.com, sign up, and you can be the first to know about the new product launches that are coming, brand new website redesign. But again, go to modernrugged.com and sign up to get the latest news when the new website debuts at modernrugged.com. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a disturbing story out of California. Sealed juvenile record hid massage therapist's past until after plea deal. So not only does this massage therapist have a past, he's got a bit of a present as well. This is from KCRA in California. They say they first reported about a guy named Kyle Blowers. He's a massage therapist who was charged with sexually assaulting three of his clients. And then while he was out on bail for that case, he was arrested again. KCRA says that there may have been warning signs years before these recent cases came to light and even happened. One of his victims said it's a perfect example of how someone can slip through the cracks. Placer County DA Morgan Gyre said there are hiccups and intricacies in every case. In this case, just about all of them. Yeah, I mean, you can call it hiccups, you can call it intricacies. I call it a flaw in California law. That's what I call it. So 3 years ago, 2023, Kyle Blowers charged with 16 felonies tied to crimes at a massage therapist business in Roseville, California, against three of his clients. One of those victims said it was devastating. Said it should have been very nice, therapeutic, relaxing. She says it was not. It's a very traumatic experience. She was, I was in my most vulnerable moment and I was taken advantage of. So Blowers is arrested. He's charged with these 16 felonies. His defense attorney asks for his bail to be lowered. Prosecutors object, but a judge agrees, and Blower is able to bond out. While he is out on bail, about a year later, by the way, these cases had not gone to trial. Blower's ended up picking up another case in Yuba County. So he's originally charged with these 16 felonies in Placer County. Then he's charged with an additional crime in Yuba County again a year later. Last year, 2025, Blower's 30 years of age at that point, accused of molesting a child. It was abuse that investigators said had started years earlier and then continued after his release on those 16 felonies. The prosecutor in Placer County said it sadly proves that we were right, that Mr. Blowers was a danger, that he would continue to victimize people. But KCRA says that was even before prosecutors realized the extent of his criminal history. In fact, prosecutors in Placer County offered Blowers a plea deal. And I guess prosecutors in Yuba County were a part of this as well, because between the two court cases, Blowers was allowed to plead no contest to just five of the 21 charges against him. And KCRA says just moments after he did accept that guilty plea, prosecutors learned critical information about his past. The Placer County prosecutor says, we were approached by family members of his who said that he had done this before. Two more alleged victims come forward. So now at this point, there are six alleged victims. And prosecutors were told that when Blowers was a teenager, he raped two young family members, causing at least one of them to become pregnant. One of the cases was reported to police and was resolved in court. But prosecutors say that Blowers was able to get that juvenile criminal record sealed. So that even prosecutors weren't aware of it. And because these were sealed records, he was able to become a certified massage therapist. KCRA spoke with Karen Pank, who's the executive director of the Chief Probation Officers of California, to ask about, okay, so what goes on here when you seal juvenile records? And she said, well, once, you know, a juvenile has gone through the system and worked their way through the program, you want to ensure that they can fully reintegrate back into society without these barriers to jobs, education. I get that, but there are exceptions in California law. Pank said there's a list of various exemptions, and like a lot of things, it's complicated. There are certain violent crimes, including sex offenses, that are not eligible for a sealed juvenile record. And in fact, KCRA says that Blower's case clearly was not exempt. Although the Placer County DA's office said that he was arrested on suspicion of sexual assault on a minor, negotiations in court may have ultimately led to a judge sustaining a lesser offense, which is allowed under the law to be sealed. The DA said it is quite likely that if this had been a violent offense, it could not have been sealed, and we would have seen it at the outset. So again, as a juvenile, Blowers sexually assaulted another juvenile. Two of them, allegedly. One of them became pregnant. He was charged with one of those crimes. And the sexual assault charge, the rape charge, if that's what he was originally charged with. Again, he was allowed to plead that down to an offense that wasn't serious enough that it needed to remain on his record. I think that's a problem. I think that's a huge problem. And the plea deals just kept coming. I mean, again, the most recent case where blowers pleaded no contest to 5 of the 21 felonies that he was facing. Prosecutors and the defense agreed on a prison sentence of 9 years, which is less than half of what he could have been sentenced to had he been convicted. KCRA says after learning of Blower's juvenile history, prosecutors asked the judge to reject the deal so they could reevaluate the sentence that they had agreed upon. But the case had already been in court for a year and a half at that point. The judge chose not to start over. He accepted the plea deal, but did increase the sentence slightly by one more year. So instead of 9 years, it's 10 years, which is really 5 years in California. You know, you get basically a day off for every day behind bars that you don't assault a prison guard or shank another inmate. So your 10-year sentence is not 10 years. If Blower spent, whatever time he spent behind bars before his bail was lowered, that would also count towards the totality of his sentence. So in reality, we're talking about even less than 5 years after he pled no contest. Placer County DA says, well, we probably could have found this juvenile offense if we did more digging. He said there was an indication on a criminal history sheet that said there was an adjudication in juvenile court in a different county in Sutter County. That's the extent of the information that we had. Okay, so that's what's, again, basically publicly available. That is interesting that the district attorney in Placer County says, well, we could have found out more if we had done more digging. Well, then why the hell didn't you do more digging? Why didn't you place a call to Sutter County? I mean, again, given the offenses that this guy was charged with, you knew that there was a juvenile adjudication of some sort. Why didn't you pick up the phone? Why didn't you send an email saying, hey, you guys charged this guy as a kid. We've got him as an adult sexually assaulting several individuals here. Could you tell me what this case was about when it was in juvenile court? So I gotta say, honestly, I'm kind of surprised that KCRA didn't go after this DA harder. Because I think the plea deal that was offered, the no contest deal, 9 years, for sexually assaulting multiple people, I think that's pretty light. But then there's just sort of, you know, casual dismissal about, yeah, you know, we probably could have found out if we just tried a little bit harder. Then try harder. That's your job. You know, this is California. I don't want to make any excuses, though, because we have seen cases like this all across the country. So this is not just a California problem. This is not just a George Soros soft on crime prosecutor problem. This is a problem that is endemic in the criminal justice system. And one of the reasons why it is a problem that's endemic in the criminal justice system is because the criminal justice system is so reliant on plea deals. At the federal level, at, you know, if you're dealing in, you know, state courts, well over 90% of criminal cases are resolved via plea deals. Most cases don't go to trial. And anytime you've got that's what you're working with, right? You're working to try to resolve this case before it goes to trial. There are going to be all kinds of pressures on prosecutors to get a deal done. And I think in so many cases, that pressure to get a deal, to get this case resolved so you can move on to the next one, ends up resulting in an injustice. And I think that is absolutely the case here with Mr. Blowers. He ultimately, I guess with all of these court cases, got a total prison sentence of 18 years, according to KCRA. So the deal in Placer County, and then I guess maybe there wasn't a deal in Yuba County. I don't know, because apparently this went from 9 years to 10 years to total prison sentence of 18 years. But again, he's going to be eligible for parole in 10 years, according to KCRA. And given that this is California, pretty good odds that he will get parole at the first opportunity. All right. On to today's Armed Citizen story. I'm sorry, I gotta take a drink here just to wash that out of my mouth. Ugh, such a gross case. Pair of home invaders get 25 years for attempted murder in 2025 Decatur shootout. Shootout would imply that there were shots fired in both directions, right? In fact, there were. This is Decatur, Illinois. Not Decatur, Alabama, by the way, where the police department just had a basic firearms training course for women that they had three sessions, all of them completely full, which I think is great. I don't know if Decatur, Illinois does anything like it, but they should. According to News 34 in Illinois, two home invaders who exchanged gunfire with an armed mom last year in Decatur were sentenced to over two decades in prison after they both pleaded guilty. 26-year-old Colton Clark and 17-year-old Christopher Johnston, both facing charges of attempted murder, aggravated with a firearm, and home invasion with discharge of a firearm, all of which are Class X felonies. Johnston reached a plea deal before a trial date could be set. Clark was scheduled to go to trial yesterday, but last month he agreed to a plea deal. Both defendants pleading guilty to attempted murder. The remaining counts were dismissed. The judge, Lindsay Shelton, overseeing both cases, sentenced them to identical terms of 25 years in the Illinois Department of Corrections. That's a pretty stiff sentence, even again under Illinois law, which means 25 years becomes 12 and a half years. According to reports at the time, the pair broke into Alexia Templer's home last February 10th, 2025. Templer, 22-year-old mom. She had 26 and a five-month-old daughters at the time. She told WCIA-TV that she was sleeping at home with her kids when she heard noises coming from her kitchen. And she realized, well, those aren't mice. Those are people. So she called her partner, who was at work at the time, and he said, you need to get your gun. Go get the gun. She said she had never held a gun before, but she grabbed it. She shouted at the intruders to leave her home. She threatened to shoot them. And that's when the home invaders opened fire. And Templer shot back. Templer ended up shot in the left forearm and in the right hip, but the intruders fled the scene. Neither child was hurt. Her sister, who was also in the home, unharmed as well. Templer's partner arrived a short time later, drove her to a local hospital. When police arrived, they found nearly 30 bullet holes in Templer's home. She said she fired four shots. And 2 hours later, officers responded to a home for a report of a man with a gunshot wound to his lower back. Identified as 24-year-old Deontay Stone, he was later interviewed by detectives at the hospital and reportedly admitted to being shot during the shootout in Templer's home. Said that he had been contacted by a juvenile he knows who asked him to take part in a burglary. He was advised that there was lots of pot there. So the plan was to sell the cannabis and to split the proceeds. Yeah. He said that he was turning away from Templer's bedroom and was walking towards the kitchen when he was shot in the back. He also said that his juvenile accomplice was the only one to fire at Templer, but Templer said, no, there were two people shooting at me. So all of the, by the way, I don't think they ended up getting any marijuana. They found a PlayStation 5. They took that. But from what I can tell, they did not get any drugs from the home. I don't know that there were any drugs to get from the home. There are also sworn statements saying that four individuals were actually involved in the burglary attempt. Two of them, I guess, stayed outside, of the residence there. Anyway, the, two individuals who were inside, who were a part of this, shootout with the mom, again, 25-year sentence. Judge, granted both of them credit for the time that they've spent in the Macon County Jail. They'll take a year off their sentence, and now it's 24 years. And interestingly enough, although Illinois does have a very lenient good behavior policy, one of these two individuals is actually going to be required to serve 85% of their sentence before they're eligible for parole, Colton Clark, the 26-year-old. So that, honestly, is something I didn't expect to see. I'm glad to know that that's an option in Illinois. You rarely hear about that being imposed, though. So there you go. A armed citizen story. Not quite a deal of the day as well, but I am glad that this mom, who, again, had never held a gun before, ended up being able to protect herself, her babies, her sister. I hope that between last February and now, she has actually gotten some training. Hopefully, she'll never have to go through anything like this again. And I think she acquitted herself very, very well for never having fired a gun before. But I hope she's gotten a little more experience and under less harrowing conditions in the months since. Finally, today, our good deed of the day in the right place at the right time, willing, able to do the right thing. Some bystanders rescuing a man from a sinking car in a Pennsylvania river. Miss E is going to haunt me if I get this wrong, but she would always make fun of me for mispronouncing the name of this river. It's the Schuylkill River, I believe. WGAL reporting that a group of bystanders, including a national rowing team member, rescued a man trapped in a sinking car in the river near Philadelphia over the weekend. Apparently, the car went off the roadway, plunged into the river. There were some people who were filming a documentary nearby who saw what happened, and they immediately started trying to save the driver. Libby Peters is one of the rescuers. She says, "We were holding him up against the car. The car went under, and just as that happened, there were two other swimmers who got out there just in time. They had life jackets. They were able to, again, extricate the man from the vehicle, taken to a local hospital for treatment. The car ultimately removed from the river. Probably not drivable, but you know what? Lose a car, save a life. I think that's a decent trade. So in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing to help a stranger in need. Those are bystanders there near Philadelphia. Who saved the day for the guy who really needed their help. And that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. I am going to be off tomorrow, so we won't have a Cam and Company on Wednesday. I will be back on Thursday, however, and look forward to seeing you then. Be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day today, tomorrow, every day, doggone it. We're keeping you abreast of all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. Even though it's sort of a slow time for state legislatures, there's still a lot of stuff going on in the courts. In fact, we're now starting to see some of the fallout from Hamani and Wolford percolating down to the lower courts and leading to some pretty interesting results. We've got new cases being filed. We've got stuff happening with the ATF, regulatory action. Still the push for national right to reciprocity in Congress. So again, a lot of things to keep an eye on. We got it all covered for you at BearingArms.com. Be sure to check it out. Look forward to seeing you again here very soon. Until then, be well. Safe.